Back with you on another edition of Connecticut Today for Tuesday, May 18th. Former Republican State Senator Len Susio of Meriden joining us. He's taken a deeper dive and a closer look, peeling back the layers of a bill that would authorize the Transportation Climate Initiative. So Len talked about that and how that bill seems to have aspects to it that could curb the overall amount of gasoline sold in Connecticut in the coming years. Business expert Carl Gould checked in with us in the 4:30 half hour to talk about what business owners and managers, large and small, may be facing now that mask mandates are going away. Of ours, who has done a couple of turns in the General Assembly, former Republican state senator from Meriden, Len Susio, joins us. And just because Len's not in the General Assembly anymore doesn't mean he doesn't stop watching this stuff for us. Len, how are you, sir?
I'm just ducky today. Well, how about you?
I had an aunt who used to use the term ducky all the time.
So oh, boy.
I'm still trying to figure it out. Hey, Len, thanks for joining us. You know, Len, listen, I said about an hour ago when I said you were going to be on, I said, you know what, this Transportation Climate Initiative, this TCI, and let's call it for what it is, Len. It's an initiative, UFA initiative. It's a tax. You and I both know that. But this is like rotten fish. Like, the longer it stays around, Len, and the more you peel it back, the more it stinks. Now, we know about the estimated $100 million of taxes this would cost you and I and people like us over 10 years or 8 or 10 years. But now it's coming to light, Len, that there are different aspects of this, some of which you're highlighting here that I've started to hear about over the past couple of weeks. Talk about that.
Yes. The so-called, they don't call it a tax, but it's a tax. I call it a tariff. That's probably because you're paying, whoever wants to sell motor fuel in Connecticut will have to bid at auction and pay a price for the right to sell gas in Connecticut. So in effect, it's a kind of a form of tariff. So that's obviously going to be added to the price of gasoline. If we're only that, okay, maybe it wouldn't be so bad. But the other part of this legislation that I hardly ever hear anyone talk about, and to me it's by far the most devastating part, is it's going to deliberately constrict the amount of fuel that can be sold in Connecticut. In the first year, the year after next, if this thing should pass, it'll restrict fuel that can be sold in Connecticut by about 156 million gallons. That's the equivalent of 280,000 Connecticut drivers' annual consumption of fuel. That is a big number, and it's only the beginning, Paul. So because over the succeeding 10 years, it's going to decrease the amount of fuel available by a half a billion gallons. So I have memories of 1973 in the Arab oil embargo, but this is the Democratic oil embargo or gas embargo on Connecticut. And not only that, Paul, They mislead people and say, oh, look, we're going to make certain that the price doesn't go up more than 5 or 10 cents. Well, what they're talking about is this price at auction. But think about this, Paul. Not only will the people who get the right, who pay for the right to sell us gas, pass that cost on to us, but what's going to happen with the reduced volume of gas available? It's going to mean there's more demand than there is supply, and it means there's going to be big increases in the price of gasoline. You got a little inkling of it down in North Carolina the other day where they're having that problem because of the hacking into the pipeline. There was a guy selling gas for $9 a gallon.
I saw that.
Like, you got to be kidding me.
Hey, Len, hang on. I want to come right back, sure. And I have two traffic and weather together here, but I want to come back and I want to get into a little more how they would be allowed and why to limit the total or the aggregate amount of gasoline actually sold to drivers. Len Susio, hang on. Back with you. First, traffic and weather together at 3:36 on WICC. All right, you probably heard about it, the Transportation Climate Initiative. Now, this was an agreement that was first rumored about a year and a half ago. I got to tell you, I'm happy I was on this early. Started having people on this pre-COVID when I started seeing this. Say, wait a minute, additional gas tax here to go where? And this was supposed to be the District of Columbia, the nation's capital, plus 10, 11, or 12 other states. Well, now it's down to D.C., Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. It took the powers that be in Hartford a few months to finally fess up to the fact that, okay, yes, this is going to raise your price at the pump, maybe $100 million over 10 years. But now as you peel the layers away in this law, this proposed law, which is still alive, there are other aspects of this, and former Meriden GOP State Senator Len Suzio continues with us. Len, go back to this aspect of it and explain how, if you can, because I know so much of this is in legalese, how the actual raw amount of gasoline sold to drivers here in Connecticut, how could that be cut down so much?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to enforce what I call an embargo, basically. You're going to have to bid at auction. If you want to sell motor fuel here in Connecticut, there will be quarterly auctions, and you will bid for the right to basically outbid everybody else and get your share of the fuel that can be sold in the state of Connecticut. Of course, that means that once people buy the right to do it, it means they theoretically could go around and sell it to someone else who's going to be short, because not everybody's going to get it. It's deliberately setting the target below the actual usage, and therefore there's going to be less supply than there is demand, and it's going to create a shortage, an artificially induced shortage of gasoline for sale here in Connecticut. And you know what is the incredibly most stupid thing about it, Paul?
What's that?
If they're going to sell less motor fuel, gas here in Connecticut, that means all the gas tax
less tax revenue
used for road are going to tank. They're going to go down the tube.
So, Len, when the bill says if people have to bid, now, are these the individual station owners? Are these the chains? Like, does Cumberland Farms say, okay, we've got 30 locations in the state? Is it going to be the chain convenience stores, Len, bidding against the mom and pops? How is that going to work?
The people who are going to sell the gas to the public are going to be the bidders on this. Now, it could be a chain of gas stations, or it could be an individually owned operation, of course. But they're going to have to, and I believe they're going to have display something at the pump that, you know, they've got this license to sell in Connecticut. So that's the way Connecticut's going to control it. Otherwise, you know, there'll be a black market for the stuff like you won't believe, because the price is going to go through the roof, Paul. And the crazy thing is, it's going to mean it's going to become more profitable to sell gas in Connecticut, because there's going to be this artificial shortage. If I'm a bidder at auction and I cop the market on the right to sell gasoline here in Connecticut, basically I've effectively eliminated a lot of my competition. Maybe I eliminate it in a certain area. I own all the gas stations in New Haven or Bridgeport, let's say. Oh, man, I'm going to make certain I outbid everybody else that's in this market. Then I've got the market to myself, and I can charge the sky is the limit, basically. So it's really a political policy that is incredibly tone deaf to the desperate situation a lot of people are here in Connecticut. We don't have, except for the New Haven, you know, to New York shoreline, there isn't a great public transportation network here in Connecticut.
And, you know, Len,
people don't have alternatives.
This reeks of, and you probably heard this phrase when you were in the General Assembly, this reeks of, you know, an answer in search of a problem. I mean, look, we all want cleaner transportation. We know that. But, Len, as you well know, the market will dictate. I mean, I've got an internal combustion engine car, a 2019, that I bought 1 year off a lease. And, Len, even when I lead foot it, I still get almost 40 miles to the gallon. People, Len, are making decisions on their own. Okay, I want to get a high mileage gasoline car, or maybe I want to buy an electric car. I fail, Len, to understand, not just governments here in Connecticut, Len, but all over the country and the world, the propensity, when it's already happening, Len, by what the market dictates, the propensity of governments to want to jam electric vehicles, which are still very expensive. They're nice. I love the technology. This push to jam hybrids down people's throats, when the market will eventually do that by itself.
Well, not only that, Paul, but I'm looking at a study that says our carbon emissions are going to decrease by 25.7% over the certain period of time.
Yeah.
And if TCI is enacted, it's going to reduce it by 26%. So for 0.3% decrease, I mean, it's insane. I can't believe the policy is even, I'd be embarrassed to propose it And again, think about this, Paul. If this goes into effect the year after next, and we're now talking about knocking 156 million gallons of fuel reduced here in Connecticut, that is going to translate into about $60 million of gas taxes that will not be available for roads and bridges. And they've been screaming for years that we've got a crisis with the transportation fund because we're not collecting enough revenue. Now they're enacting a policy. All the money that's going to be collected in this policy has got not a nickel of it's going to go towards roads and bridges. So they're going to take what they describe as a crisis already, and they're going to magnify it all the more. What happens then?
And even you know, Len Susio is the guest, by the way, even such no-good right-wing groups, Len, like the Sierra Club, have come out and said, you know, we like what the idea is here, but there's no safeguards in this, Len. I have the release from the Sierra Club on file. Even the Sierra Club says there's no safeguards into how this money is going to be spent.
Well, one of the things that Democrats are doing, they're buying the inner city legislators to vote for this because they're promising half of the money is going to go to the city.
There you go.
Their natural constituency. So that's what's going on here. It's going to be used to buy more Democratic votes is what is going to be done and screw the rest of the people of Connecticut.
Len, thank you. As always, I appreciate it. Former Republican State Senator Len Susio in Meriden, been in and out of the General Assembly a couple of times, but he is still keeping an eye on the minutiae, the stuff that, folks, you and I don't have time to read. It makes our eyes bleed over, but Len is used to this. So, Len, how does your head not crack open when you read this stuff? What do you do? Is it coffee? Is it beer? How do you get your listen, I know it's probably a secret of yours, but I won't ask. Len, let's keep in touch. All right, buddy?
Yes, and encourage your listeners to call the governor's office on 884, Bill 884.
Bill 884. Thank you, Len. Appreciate it. Len Susio there. All right, folks, that's it. We got to defeat Bill 884. We don't need $100 million in increased gasoline taxes. We don't need gasoline credits and carbon auctions. This is dumb. This is ludicrous. Okay, the market will dictate. Do you see all those hybrids on the road and all those charging stations popping up? It's because naturally people gravitate toward that because they're consumers. Consumers are smart. They say, hey, look at this. I've got the money now. It's environmentally safe. Let's do this. Let's not have anybody in Hartford or in D.C. jamming this stuff down our throats. Wednesday, middle of the week, May 19th, is when the state of Connecticut here gets rid of all the state-level mask mandates. The CDC got rid of all their mask mandates last week. Now, individual businesses, though, they are not government entities, so they will be able to operate largely as they want to. What does a business do? How do they walk this line of keeping their customers happy and safe, their employees happy and safe? There's always the specter, too, of litigation, of liability. Joining us right now is a gentleman who's a worldwide leading authority on business. His company, Seven Stage Advisors, helps organizations grow to the next level. Carl Gould is with us. He is an entrepreneur who built three multi-million dollar businesses by the age of 40. See, he had some incentive in his life. I didn't. Some of the companies he's helped are Allstate, American Idol, U.S. Olympic Track, IBM, McGraw-Hill, and the U.S. Army. You may have heard of those. Carl, welcome to WICC. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, Carl, we're getting closer and closer, I guess. In most states, there are some holdouts here. But even here in deep blue Connecticut, most of our government mandates are going away. You saw what the CDC did last week. So, Carl, what's the business to do here? I can imagine they've been looking at this over the past few months, knowing it's going to happen. What do you think is going on in both the boardrooms and even some local businesses?
Well, there's a lot of confusion going on right now. And this new guidance did the business owner really no favors, because it's an impossible policy for them to follow. And it's really unfair to a business owner to try to enforce this. I mean, think about it. If you think about what a business owner goes through to get a customer to walk through the door, you know, between marketing and branding and staffing and putting on, you know, buying inventory, and then to have to then selectively enforce a policy of who's vaccinated and can take their mask off and who's not and can leave it on. I mean, it's just not a clear policy, and it's putting the business owner in an impossible position. And there's just no practical way that they can really enforce it.
Carl, you think this might have been maybe a case of the CDC and the feds kind of throwing their arms up in the air here and saying, you know what, the vaccines are out there, people are getting antsy, unemployment is still not where we want it to be. Is this just kind of a, I hate to use this term, but kind of an all-screw-it moment, let's see what happens?
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's even screw it, but this move would tell you right now that your government does not understand small business, right there. So that's a little bit of a warning sign. But I think it's optics. You know, they could say, well, look, we open up the economy. Hey, look, we loosen the regulations. Hey, look, we put choice back on you. But what they did was they made the small business owner the bad cop. Oh, I'm not going to serve you, or I am going to serve you. Mm. That's just unfair. That they have enough. They have enough on their plate, just trying to service the client and make them happy. They can't be a regulatory body. It's just simply not their job.
Carl, hang on. More with Carl Gould. Carl will be back with you after a quick check of traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And I assume there are some businesses, big and small, around Fairfield County, New Haven County here in Connecticut that are saying to themselves, okay, when this state-level mandate goes away tomorrow for masks, coupled with what the CDC did last week, what am I going to do? A few more minutes with Carl Gould. He joins us. His company is called Seven Stage Advisors. Check it out online. It's the number 7 and then Stage, STAGE, Advisors, ADVISORS. Carl may have some business opportunities and some services that he could offer you there, 7stageadvisors.com. Carl, one of the things that I'm waiting to see how it shakes out here is liability. Carl, you know, business owners are faced every day with things like employers, workman's compensation and insurance, yeah, and all that. So what are you hearing from companies who may be frightened, or they're consulting with their counsel saying, well, how do I prevent an employee from coming to me saying, well, I think I caught COVID here because you did or did not do something with the customers? I can imagine how nerve-wracking that would be.
Yeah, while a business owner does have insulation from that, it doesn't stop anybody from accusing you. And so what we're advising business owners to do right now is you need to be seen as offering a safe and sanitized and healthy environment in which your employees can work and in which your clients can come in and patronize your establishment, whatever that might be. So we're suggesting that on the employee side, although the mask mandate might be lifted, you may want to consider having your employees wear their masks. You may still have all of your sanitizing stations out, practice social distancing, have your regular cleaning schedules and post them. You know, just like if you're a restaurant and you wear a hairnet or you put gloves on when you're handling something, I would still stick to the social guidelines that have been put out of distancing, sanitizing, masks, and even taking somebody's temperature, both employees and, if you wanted to do this, even taking your customer's temperature. You know, you could take a temperature equally on the wrist as you do on the forehead. It's less intrusive, and you're at least sending the message that we're promoting a safe, clean environment. And then, you know, people are going to, take away the mask mandate, they're not going to wear their masks. So most people are not going to wear it. So at least you are seen to be doing what you can to promote a safe environment without trying to be a regulatory body.
And Carl, we've kind of had the pump primed here for a year and a half, and I got a lot of callers here on my show that have said, yeah, I'll still continue to wear the mask. It's okay. It's not stigmatizing. So, you know, I think, Carl, to what you're saying here, if businesses still want to do stuff like this, I don't see this mass revolt, at least in a lot of spots. I don't know what you think, but I don't think people are going to go crazy for a few more months.
No. I mean, overall, I think people have COVID fatigue and they would rather not wear the mask yet. I do agree with you that it's the least intrusive of all of the things we've heard. And you can make it a fashion statement. You can have a little bit of fun with it. It is one of those things. You know, I've seen the gator necks out there and, you know, people wearing their, you know, Darth Vader mask and all that. So you can have a little bit of fun with it. You know, if you're a business, say, we'll give out a coupon, a voucher, an award to the best mask we see today. You know, I mean, you can actually have some fun with that and make it, you know, appealing to your customer base without it being too intrusive.
Finally, Carl, the other elephant in the room here is, can a business, and you and I both know the answer to this, but I get calls on it and I read stories about it from my listeners, can a business mandate that as a continued condition of employment that their workers have to be vaccinated against COVID-19? How do you see that shaking out?
Yeah, that's a tricky one because, you know, in some states, you check with your local attorney, your employment attorney, but in many states, you can mandate that your employees have to take a vaccine. Some airlines are doing that, as a matter of fact. So you can do that, but you also risk jeopardizing an employee that might be a valued employee who either philosophically or medically or has another reason for not taking it. So as soon if you go down that road where you mandate it, but then you make an exception, you've kind of pierced the veil of your standard, and then you're asking for all sorts of trouble. I mean, it's all sorts of trouble. So if you're an employer and you're going to mandate it, be prepared that you may risk a good employee because they may even have a legitimate reason. Mm-hmm. But legitimate, you know, you're asking for trouble there.
The website, 7stageadvisors.com. That's the number 7 and then stageadvisors.com. Roll it all together. Carl Gould has joined us. Hey, Carl, thanks. We appreciate it. And we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Carl Gould there.